Chapter 2. "The McKinnon," I said into the intercom. "I'm afraid we're in close season and not taking guests. Is there anything I can help you with?" There was no answer, just dead air. It had been dark for hours, and the hotel's interior lights were reflected in the floor-to-ceiling windows of the modern lobby extension. The glass was as black as a polished lock. I could detect, just beneath the surface, a flash of swirling snow, but whoever was out there could see me clearly, and I was light blind. Thankfully, I'd locked the revolving doors. I pressed the intercom button and tried again. "Hello, the McKinnon. I'm afraid we're in our close season now and aren't taking bookings. How can I help?" Again, nothing. Something about that black absence made me nervous. I tried to ignore it as I crossed to the doors. From 10 paces, the glass looked opaque, but at arm's length, I could make out shapes in the night. The turning circle and fountain flitted intermittently through the dark. I could see the squat outline of the old larch, over 2 centuries old, they said. The tree's base was a wizened knot, and the trunk a vast map of creases and clefts. It had been tall in its heyday, over 200 feet, but its highest sections had been badly damaged in a storm a couple of years ago, and after a spat with the council over a preservation order, surgeons had removed them, so the old thing was barely the height of the hotel now. I squinted further out. Up the drive, huddled amongst black woods, I could just discern the guest garages, empty for the winter. Beyond more shrouded darkness, sentinel silhouettes of Scots pine. I took a few steps to the left and right, aware of how I must look to the visitor, a woman in a suit with tied back hair and an uneasy expression. I didn't much like this exposed perspective of myself, so I returned to the desk. It occurred to me the appearance of a phone call might be helpful. Picking up the receiver, I cradled it between shoulder and cheek and pretended to stab a number in. It took me a second to notice the outside line was dead. The inside line, wired up in the 50s after they took the bell pulls out, was a weatherproof closed circuit, but Mitchell had warned me about outside lines coming down in bad weather. The mute emptiness at the end of the phone caught a thread of fear in me and pulled. For the first time, I preferred the prospect of bartending, defending my secrets from Jay. The reception buzzer came again, making me jump. I replaced the phone, pressed the flashing intercom button, and picked up. "The McKinnon, how can I help?" A breathy voice said,
"Police officer."
Local accent.
"I need to come in."
I looked into the reflective pools of glass. There was a male shape there now, one shoulder against the frame of the rotating doors, leaning in. He was standing in the dark, but I could see a heavy ski jacket, collar upturned against the wind.
"I had an accident up on the mountain road," the figure said.
He paused, breathing hard like he might be in pain.
"My radio's down. I need access to your phone."
My mind slipped its gears and raced free.
"I'll have to ask for ID," I said. "Hotel policy."
I thought about phone lines. It was possible to get a mobile signal from some of the upper rooms, if the booster was still operational, but chances were the officer would be out of luck.
"Gaines,"
said the voice. The figure pressed a card up against the glass.
PC 4256 Gaines, Police Scotland. Open the door, please, miss."
The man's silhouette was slewed, and I realised he was putting his weight on one leg, raising the other. He was injured.
"Give me a minute."
I crossed the lobby and unlocked. He was a black bulk in the revolving doors, like a penned animal in a slaughterhouse turnstile. Once inside, he became a man again. 6 feet tall, broad-shouldered, and bulked out by a stab vest beneath his police-issue snow jacket. A ripped flap swung from the trouser at his right knee, exposing damaged skin. He had a weathered 40-something face.
"Thanks," he said.